Most of us are very new to Buddhism, but maybe we don't know so much about it, but it feels right, feels good. That's why we're here. And so we are hoping to know more about it as we practice. And if somebody says, what is Buddhism? There can be a very long answer, or it could be the very short answer, which is that Buddhism is the study and the practice of reality. Nothing more than that. Study and practice of reality. And this, our study and practice provides us the foundation for understanding the true nature of all the things in our everyday world. And when we engage in Buddhism, in the study, in the practice of reality, drop off the tendency or the habit of being caught up by the appearance of things. So our engagement with Buddhism and with practice enables us to let go of what's on the surface of things and get down to the true nature. And our study and our practice also means that we don't so much get caught up by our emotions as we engage with the things of our everyday life, the things and people of our everyday life. Emotions don't play as big a role as they used to. In his own study and practice, Buddha discovered fundamental truth that he passed on to us, that life is full of suffering. And he further said at that time that life is suffering because people do not understand the true nature of things. That's the reason. They don't understand the nature of things. And it's all explained in the sutras and in Buddha's teaching, and it's all explained in the Heart Sutra that we just finished chanting. It's all explained, the true nature of things. It's all there. So we chant, and there is no eyes and there is no ears and so forth, and we say there is no sight, no sound, and no consciousness. And we chant that. And twice a week here in this place we chant that. But what does it mean? Logically it makes no sense. There's no eyes, no ears, no consciousness. That makes no sense. Because our senses tell us there is consciousness, there is sight, there is sound. Our senses are very immediate, very tangible. And when our senses relate to the things in this world, we feel alive and emotions come up. Sometimes very joyful emotions, sometimes not so happy, but their emotions come up and they tell us, you're alive. So what does it mean? No consciousness, no sight, no ears, none of that. That doesn't make sense. How can we say that they don't exist? But that's what the teaching tells us. But how can we say that? When we say they don't exist, we don't mean, it doesn't mean they don't exist. we don't mean it's the opposite of exist or to exist. So when we say eyes don't exist, ears don't exist, consciousness doesn't exist, it doesn't mean the opposite of to exist. It simply means they are temporary. They're not tangible, impermanent. So they exist and don't exist at the same time. These things of the world and these things about ourselves are always changing, always coming and going. So the significance of the Heart Sutra that we just chanted is that everything is changing. And the world that we live in is characterized by a continuous birth and death of things and people coming and going. This is the Heart Sutra, and this is the study and practice of reality. So when we don't understand the real meaning of birth and death, this is how the problem of suffering is created. So if we really want to be Buddhists and understand our life according to a Buddhist way, means we have to know about suffering. One of the other key principles of one of the key teachings of the Buddha was that a problem for us is that we become attached to things of the world. But since everything is always changing, it's not possible to hold on to anything. But we insist. We want to stay attached to various things and various people. And when they change on us, when we find that we can't grasp them, that they're very slippery, well, we don't like that. We'd rather they stayed still and we could hold them, these things of the world. So we don't like that. And because we don't like that, we see the world as being very disagreeable. We don't like it. This world is disagreeable because we feel we are restricted and can't have what we want, can't hold on to it, can't do what we want, things keep changing. So what we learn from our practice, what we experience very deeply, is that we cannot live exactly as we want in some kind of perfect world. And if we crave that perfect world and we can't have it, we call it suffering. But that's a misunderstanding. Usually people do not know the real reason that they feel suffering. But rather than reflect on it when they feel it, rather than reflect on it or consider it, try to understand it, instead they try to create a perfect world for themselves. They try to imagine a perfect world where there is no suffering. A world where there is no suffering. And the Buddhist understanding of the nature of things says this is a big mistake, trying to create a world of no suffering. big delusion. Big delusion. It's a big delusion because there is no such thing as perfection. We can't create a perfect world. There's no such thing. Perfection, I think perfection for people would be a world where we have everything and nothing changes. Wouldn't that be nice? You have everything and it won't change. And I think most people live their life with that hope or that expectation. Make a list of all the things I need and want, collect them, and I'll be happy. With the assumption that they won't change. But this isn't possible. And if we fall in love with this idea of perfection, we suffer. Let me collect everything I want and it won't change. If we behave that way, we set ourselves up for suffering. And our history, human history, is really the history of suffering. And if you look very carefully at history and what goes on, besides all the dates of when things happen and the places and the personalities who were involved in all these events, the wars and the treaties and the migrations, what we see beyond that information is people were really emphasizing just what they want. It's happening today. People going for what they want. And by so doing, just create more suffering. When we emphasize only what we want, it means we're not ready for the inevitable change that will take place. We're not ready for the next stage. And this sets us up for suffering. Our practice is the preparation for the next stage. The readiness of mind, as Suzuki Roshi famously said, practice is preparation for the next stage. And when we practice that way, preparing for the next change, for the next stage, then everything is in good shape for us. But when we emphasize only our own comfort or our own prosperity, we create a problem. And the problem becomes huge, very big, when our life is self-centered. The sutras say that everything that appears in the world must disappear. And Suzuki Roshi said, the only thing that is real is something that will disappear. The only thing that is real is something that will disappear. If it doesn't disappear, it cannot be real. And this is something to consider, something to really understand. So, to have hope that something will not disappear or something will not die is an illusion. And when you accept that something will change or something will die, then it becomes real, not illusion. If we live our life completely in the present and enjoy what we have in the present, that means we are prepared for the next stage. We are always prepared. Everything is always going and changing. It's true for the material things, and it's true of our relationships with each other. So it's foolish to try to hang on tight to anything. So to hold on to things or people this way is a kind of pathology. To hold them this way is our practice. So the best way to have something is to be ready to let it go. Like you have a bird, ready to let it go, with the understanding that something else is coming. Not too far behind. And so we should always be ready to welcome it, whatever it is. This is a mind that's at peace. And we should know that as soon as it comes, this new things, it's going. It comes, it's ready to go. So our practice prepares us to accept each new situation and be ready to let it go. Be ready to let go of the things that are always going anyhow. And even though we may suffer when it goes, or he goes, or she goes, when we know that this is our world, that's wisdom. And to accept this kind of suffering of coming and going, to accept the suffering that might occur with the changing nature of things, is the unfolding of our true nature and of our true spirit. It is the understanding of birth and death. It is nirvana. They talk about nirvana. Your own particular way of life may be very good. Things falling into place may be very good. But it would be a mistake to think that it is perfect. Because our idea of perfect is itself not a perfect idea. Even though we may think so. We may say, oh, life is just perfect. Well, maybe for now. So we can't really say perfect. We can just say, oh, that's what it is now. There is no perfect way of life in this world. Because all things are constantly changing and constantly renewing. That is the only perfection, the changing nature of things. Even if we create the most complete kind of culture or society that works very well, it's ready for change. It will always change. So we should never force our own way on anyone. With the idea that, oh, this one's perfect, you should do this. Tomorrow it will change. So if we see a problem, we can offer a better way, but without insisting that it is the perfect way. Each person, each of our individual lives and our collective lives are carried by the spiritual nature. Our effort in life based on our spiritual nature is the best foundation for our life. It's better than relying on our personal prosperity, our successes, our political beliefs, or our religious beliefs. We're trying to make things perfect, because that's impossible. We should base our effort on our inherent spiritual nature. You know, if we totally ignore or dismiss our spiritual side, if we pay no attention to it or make believe it doesn't exist, we are not human, not really. We are more like an animal in a circus who is captive to its desires and has been trained to perform. And if you are put into what you feel, or if you find yourself that you're in what you might feel is the perfect environment, the food is wonderful, the temperature is ideal, you have all the amenities. If you're in that environment, still we can't be satisfied. We can never be satisfied. Human beings can never be satisfied with some kind of perfect environment. Some suffering is absolutely necessary for us. The experience of everything changing is necessary for us. It is absolutely necessary for us to express ourselves in the changing world of coming and going, not in some static kind of perfect world. We have to express ourselves in the world of coming and going, where we have problems to work on. Then we can be human. Buddha's insight, when it took place, occurred because he changed his orientation. He started to see things in a different way. And he saw reality. He saw the true nature of things and the true nature of life. So our practice is to have Buddha's orientation or worldview. To have Buddha's orientation means that we realize that we are the world of birth and death, and we realize we are already in nirvana. To completely realize that everything is coming and going and everything is impermanent, that is nirvana. So tonight we chanted that all the aggregates are empty and there's no such thing as eyes and ears, etc. And when we reflect on it, we say, how could that possibly be compatible with our everyday life? But this chant is like a message from the spiritual world. And even though it may seem confusing, when we first hear it, it's not spam. It's not spam. It's code for everything is always changing, and birth and death is continuous, and nothing is perfect, and you are not so important. That's what the sutra means. But it's not easy to get rid of desires, because it is not easy to get rid of ideas about ourselves. So what we should do is reorient our view and orient our view so that we are number two, and let the entire world become number one priority. Then we're always ready for something new, and we won't be troubled by the world of suffering. Does anyone have a question tonight? Scott.
Since you were discussing the Heart Sutra, I was wondering if you could just say a little bit about what Prajnaparamita means.
Paramita means the truth. There are six paramitas. They are the different truths, and Prajna means wisdom. So it's understanding the truth of the true nature of things. It's understanding the true nature of things. This is prajna. To see past appearances, the true reality of everything. Prajna.
And a follow-up question.
Okay.
Do we equate that with practice of sitting? Practicing Prajnaparamita is the same as sitting in meditation?
I think so. I think we could say that. Sitting with emptying our mind of stray thoughts and letting the mind be open to the reality of things is to practice Prajnaparamita. Yes, Bonnie.
So it's annual review time at work, performance reviews, and I haven't had mine yet. I'm not too worried about it, but the energy, the moment I came in today, felt, I guess, tense, and people were stressed out, and I think a couple of my coworkers, I can just tell that they didn't get good reviews, and at the same time, I'm not part of the conversation. I can just sense what's going on. But I feel like I want to do something to make them feel accepted or encouraged. But I don't really know what to do. And so I was just thinking, you know, nothing's perfect. But when I feel like I want to do something, like I want to do something, but I don't know what to do.
Do you mean you want to do something for them?
I want them to feel encouraged, not discouraged.
So this is where your bodhisattva nature is expressed. I think what we can do for people in those circumstances is when we accept them and don't judge them and let them know that whatever happened in the review is just some arbitrary thing that some industry made up, some routine, some procedure that companies have to go through, but it's not who they are. That's not who they are in the true sense. That's just something society made up to kind of get by. But that's not who they are, and they should. The important thing is to be comfortable with their self, who they are, not about some kind of feedback or other, which they can learn from, but shouldn't let themselves be judged too much by it. It's what the sutra says, settle the self on the self. Don't settle the self on the performance review. Settle the self on your confidence, your qualities, your true nature, your resilience, those aspects of our character. Performance review is temporary and just something made up by somebody. I think if we can help people understand that, that would be a nice gift. Yes.
Actually, comment actually reminded me of similar situation about, I don't know, 25 years ago. I was in graduate school, and there was a really wonderful friend of mine who was in the same major, very, very, very close friend. But he was very miserable because he just was repeatedly not doing well in whatever it is that was needed in the school. And there was like a conversation eventually, like after so much struggle, so much suffering, I could see there was a lot of pain, and he had a lot of pressure. His father had apparently paid for him to travel, you know, across international boundaries and paid for his tuition. And I kind of, I could see that it was just not his thing. He was really not, it was not his fit, actually. And he just was there because his father expected him to be there and do that. So I had I reminded me of a conversation where I asked him, you are a very good person. It doesn't necessarily mean that you were very good in computer theory, population theory. Just because you are not, it doesn't mean that your life has no meaning. It is not like, it is just, there is no anything absolute, there are no hard and fast rules. Just because somebody expected you to be here, you have to live your life. You know, what is your inclination? And it may be that this just is not where he is.
So where is he today?
I actually unfortunately lost touch. I think he's somewhere in Canada. I probably should be in touch with him. But he ended up,
What happened to him?
He ended up being happy. He was not doing what he was forced to do. So
he made a change?
I'm not claiming I just kind of like had him question himself. I'm not.
Okay.
And maybe I'm sure many people have similar experiences.
Well, I think this is where we live and where you all work, we cannot be indifferent to the feedback we get from, you know, our seniors. We can't be indifferent. We have to pay attention to it. But we have to be careful not to become overwhelmed by it and have it run our lives. If we, you know, somehow discover that everything we do is simply in preparation for the next review, and all of our months are, oh, how will this affect my next review? We're kind of like robots. So we can't be indifferent, but yet we mustn't lose ourselves in all that. And that's a challenge for us. Not for me anymore, but for you who still have careers in the famous Silicon Valley. It's hard. I'm hoping that practice helps. Thank you. Dave.
Les, when you were talking about the way that it's confusing that the Heart Sutra says no form, no sensation, no suffering, no cause, and so forth, I was reminded of something I read recently about that exact same reaction that a lot of people had when they first hear the Heart Sutra. This writer said, a lot of people, when they first hear it, are so shocked they think it should be called the Heart Attack Sutra. And I wanted to just check my understanding of something. The way that I've always thought about all of those negations, I mean, they're not just negations of a random collection of things, they're negations of a lot of the fundamental teachings, the Four Noble Truths, and five aggregates, and all this. None of that exists, right? And it's always seemed to me that the underlying lesson there is we have this tendency to want to grasp at things, to have them be permanent, to hang on to them. And just as we experience that tendency in the rest of our lives, we also experience it when we come to the truths of Buddhism. And we grab onto them and make them into these abstractions that are permanent and grasp them and hang on to them. And what the Heart Sutra, I think, is saying is, don't do that. As you were saying, don't hold them like this. Hold them like this.
That's what it says. Yes, please, Columbine.
I was wondering, so when we were kids, we're kind of taught to have aspirations in life and goals and plans and, you know, 10-year plans, 5-year plans, whatnot, and everything is in preparation. And once you're on a track, you're kind of locked into that track. It feels that way. And I guess my question is just, it seems like it would make a lot more sense to teach a child to be adaptable, because it's pretty obvious that things don't always go the way you want them to go. So why don't we teach our children to be more adaptable?
We forgot how. The Industrial Revolution started to change all that. But I think that's right. I think we're teaching career values too early. We should be teaching poetry and music and art and literature, and having young children explore the inner world, the inner person, before we teach them to code. I think we should delay that a few years. Let them do poetry for the first few years. So I think you're right. Thank you. Yes, please. Sharmila.
You said that there is no perfect world and no perfect environment. And if one thinks that everything has to be perfect, then that is the that leads to suffering. And knowing this, you also said that it is not good to impose any perfect idea onto anybody. But I was just thinking that this happens many times. A perfect idea is imposed on, it has happened to me, that you are related to me or you are my friend, and this is the perfect idea. This is how it should be. And this is how you should accept, or this is how you should do too. Otherwise, you're not my friend. Otherwise, you're not my daughter or related to me. This happens all the time. And like he said, it's a difference between hanging on this way as opposed to this way. The idea is good, but it is felt this way instead of this way. I find it very, I always found it very difficult to explain what was not right. So, if the person asked me, well, this is right, trust me, believe me, and do it this way. And I know that it is right, and it may be right, the idea is right, but it's very hard for me to explain what is wrong in the way the perfect idea has been imposed on me. I don't know how to explain. How do you explain this versus this?
Explain
what is wrong with imposing the idea that may be right. It may be right, but it is being imposed on me and feeling this way instead of this way.
It's being imposed on you?
Yes. How do you explain that? How do you explain the opposite person what is wrong with it?
How do you explain what is wrong with what they are trying to tell you?
Yes, imposing the perfect idea.
Oh, don't explain it. Don't explain it. Just say thank you. Thank you. And you don't have to say any more. Thank you. Oh, yes, please. Did you? No. Okay, sorry. Oh, Richard.
The idea of perfection is a strange idea. I might have my own idea, like everything orderly, lined up, and the next person has a completely different view of perfection. So if I let go of my idea of perfection, then is the world imperfect? Or is it the world just perfect all by itself, regardless of what I think about it?
Yeah. Yes, if we stop thinking about it, we can see the perfection. It's the thinking that gets us confused.